Y'all know this one. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. We are climbing Jacob's ladder. Lord, help us lay our burdens down. Jacob squares off against his brother Esau again, lying to gain their father's favor. And the younger brother wins his birthright and the blessing and the inheritance in his wager, but loses not only his family in the exchange, but also himself. So Jacob left Beersheba and set out for Haran, not yet grasping the magnitude of his exile, nor realizing that he would never see his parents again. All he knows is what it feels like to be utterly alone. Panting with self-pity, Jacob camps out on rocks, an outward and visible sign of his current inward hardness. He surrenders to his exhaustion and has a dream. And he dreams that heaven and earth are connected by a ladder and that the steps are crowded with angels on the way up and on the way down. I imagine his vision is a welcome and surprising respite for this brother on the run. Maybe help is not so far away. Maybe hope will come in the morning. Maybe healing begins when I see that the opposites I see are two ends of one reality like that ladder, and that the brother I objectify and compete against and hate is part of me. But Jacob is such a stranger to himself at this point in the story, he hardly knows what to do with the embrace that his vision gives him. I have a friend who took a long trip when she was several years out of college. A beautiful woman of social prominence, she left friends and family and work behind. Over the course of her travels, she met and dismissed not a few lovers, spent money she really didn't have, and found herself one morning on a beach somewhere in the Middle East, exhausted, embarrassed, hungover, and alone. She said, "I'd hopped from country to country and relationship to relationship. And one day I woke up and realized that the constant in the chaos was me. I thought I was running away from home in order to find myself. In fact, the person I was running away from was me." That night in her dreams, she didn't see an image of a ladder leading up to heaven, but she does recall that a voice seemed to say, "Stop. Listen, breathe. Stop. Listen, breathe." And she remembers not being so afraid for once. She said, "I felt opposing forces at the same time, something bad and something very good." She continues, "First, the choices I had made, and especially the relationships that I had squandered, had trapped me in a knot of shame and ill will. I can't tell you how many people were mad at me and how much energy I had wasted projecting my struggles onto other folks instead of dealing with them. But second, I felt like there was a spirit who willed my freedom, who suggested that I could be known and forgiven and loved and free, who asserted that I am loved and that living honestly and with compassion is perhaps the only freedom worth having." The next day, she said, "I started to crawl back home." And Mara Lindbergh writes, "When one is a stranger to himself, then one is estranged from others. Only when one is connected to her core," she writes, "is she truly connected to those around her." And Jacob, too, is running away from home, from his brother, from himself. In fact, Jacob is a fugitive in today's narrative, and he has traveled to a certain place, which I believe the reader is to understand as nowhere in particular and everywhere in general. It's in quotation marks in my text, a certain place, to escape his brother's murderous rage. No surprises here. With the help of his mother, Jacob has tricked his elderly father and stolen his brother Esau's rightful blessing as the firstborn son. And when our reading says Jacob put a stone under his head for a pillow, a better translation would say that he places the stone at his head to protect himself. You see, when Jacob lies down to sleep, his inner and outward environments are anything but peaceful. The first hearers of this story would know that Jacob is hiding behind that stone, with his heart pulsing with fear and his hand clenching his knife. And I think of all the children, teenagers, young adults in our city who too go to bed at night clutching some weapon, hiding behind one stone or another. Read the front page of the Sun this morning and you'll hear the sorrow, the fear, the anger in their voices. They're a lot more like Jacob than they're not. We're a lot more like Jacob than we're not. And we're a whole lot like those young men and young women than we often let ourselves believe. What happens next is the Bible's first explicitly recorded dream, what psychologists would call an instance of Jacob working out the residue of his tumultuous day. Now, don't you like that? He just went to sleep. But what happened was he was working out the residue of his tumultuous day. According to biblical scholar Naomi Rosenblatt, this dream dawns in Jacob's abject dejection and loneliness. That's when it dawns. And within this moment of utter exhaustion and pain, God visits him in a singular way. Isn't that when God seems to come? We think God will come on a sunny hill with clouds in the sky and the angels singing, but instead God comes with the angels rattling him up and saying, I can connect you to your deepest sense of self and to everybody else. And guess what, Jacob? I can connect you to your brother. That's the loneliness and the exhaustion and the pain that those messengers of God come to. And you might think that what happened next would be that Jacob laid there all night bug-eyed as the result of his guilty conscience, or that if he did finally manage to drop off, that he'd be tormented by anxiety dreams. Instead, we're told, he lay down and saw that there was a ladder reaching up to heaven. And the words that God spoke in the vision were not the chewing out that he might have expected, but something different, less about judgment, more about embrace. Frederick Buechner writes, in other words, it wasn't holy hell that came to Jacob that night in his dream, it was holy heaven. What do you make of that? In that moment of exhaustion and pain, holy heaven is what comes. God promises Jacob all that he has lost and has most despaired of ever recovering, a family, a homeland, and most important, a feeling of being blessed. He offers Jacob a ladder out of his despair, a bridge connecting heaven and earth. And the Lord goes on, I'm with you, Jacob, and I will keep you, and you will never be alone. Stop focusing on your older brother and competing with him. In fact, forget about all the things that you don't have. Let go of the person you are not. And God says, I'll help you piece together the one that you are. You have a purpose and a destination, Jacob. You're wanted and wonderfully made. You're more than your anger and your treachery and your sadness. It's part of you. But you're more than your fear, the Lord says. And so are we. If we were to lie down this evening with a stone for a pillow, what dreams would come? Like Jacob, how have you confused competing with engagement and winning with blessing? What part of you are you running away from? And what would it take for you to come back home? Is there some pain that you can risk being present to finally? Perhaps to discover that God is no stranger to your biggest struggles and losses and messes and present in them too? Have you been running so fast that you don't even remember who you are? Stop. Listen. Breathe. I wonder if we could train ourselves to ask the Spirit's question first thing every morning. Who was I before the alarm clock rang? Who was I in the stranger in my dreams? Who was that stranger and how is she me? Will you open yourself up to the healing of interconnection and outer relationship so that you can be used as Baltimore most needs you? Will you open yourself up to interconnection and outer relationship so that you can be used as your workplace most needs you? Open yourself up to the interconnection and the outer relationship so that you can be most used as Redeemer needs you, as your family needs you, as you most need yourself. What's keeping us from creating justice and being peace? Poet Donna Markova writes, I choose to inhabit my days, to allow my living to open me, to make me less afraid, more accessible, to loosen my heart until it becomes a wing, a torch, a promise. And she continues. When I was in the hospital being treated for cancer, the one person whose presence I welcomed was a woman who came to sweep the floors with a push broom. Of all the people who made contact with me in a given day, and there were about 50 of them, she was the only one who wasn't trying to change me, didn't want anything from me, didn't ask me for anything, didn't poke me, didn't prod me. For a few minutes each night, she rested her broom against the wall and sank into a turquoise plastic chair in my room. All I could hear was the sound of her breath going in and out. And my own breathing settled down, following hers. One night, she reached out and put her hand on my foot. And on the next visit, I remember catching her gaze. No evaluation in her brown, buttery eyes, no trying to figure me out. She just looked at me and saw me completely. Then she said quietly, firmly, you are more than the sickness in that body. The words seemed larger and fuller than herself alone, and I kept mumbling those words to myself the following day. I am more than the sickness in this body. I remembered her voice clearly, rich and full like maple syrup in the spring. It carried me. When the nurse came with a shot of morphine the next night, I refused it. I wanted to find out if my nighttime angel was real or a drugged hallucination. An hour or so later, I heard the sound of her broom brushing against the marble hall floors. Because I hadn't had the morphine, the pain I was feeling was intense. She came into my room, breathed loudly, and after a few minutes said, "You are not the pain in that body. It's there, but you're more than the pain." I reached out for her hand and she continued, "You are not the fear in that body. You're more than that fear. Float on it. Float above it. You are more than that pain." And I began to breathe a little deeper, as I had as a child and as a teenager when I would float on a lake. Stop. Listen. Breathe. Jacob's angel takes him on a similar journey. And when he wakes up the next morning, he knows that he is more than the petty thief who was running away. He's more than his fear and more than his anger. And if Jacob and his brother are ever going to be reconciled, Jacob knows that this work is his work, and it will begin with him. He can be the change that he longs for. And we're more than the messes that we've made, more than the relationships that we've squandered, more than the bridges that we've burned. We're more than any sickness and more than any pain. We're more than any fear that shackles us, more than any anger that poisons us, and more than any short-sighted judgment that keeps our neighbors and brothers and sisters and ourselves at arm's length. There's more than separation, more than seeing our lives as competing for limited resources, more than running away from the problems that confront us. Heaven and earth are connected. That's what Jacob discovers. Heaven and earth are connected, and so are we. We're no longer strangers or enemies, but brothers and sisters. No longer estranged, but united. No longer exhausted, but empowered and able to utilize every resource in heaven to create justice and bring peace on earth. Amen.